and most welcome to your meeting. Let's also extend our warm welcome to Deputy Minister Mahawule and the senior officials of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. I suggest that we do start with the three presentations that we are going to take, because as members are aware, Parliament seems to be pregnant with a plethora of activities today, and they overlap over each other, many of them. I also have to be in another meeting, convened by the chair of committee, but I think it's at 1 o'clock. But there are two activities taking place now, even as we start here, where some of you are expected to go there. And some of the members have already indicated that after 2 hours or so, they would request to take leave of this meeting. And then, of course, in the afternoon, it's the questions for oral reply by the president. So that we can have a fair discussion and engagement and questions and comments on the three topics, I suggest that we start with the presentation. DM, there are, in the old English, the old one, strange faces. And because of that, I'm going to request that DM or DDG Makaya to introduce your colleagues.
Thank you, Chair. As you correctly put it, we have not many new faces, but very few. We'll request the chief to introduce the new faces. But it would be good if we just allow the department to just take that quick round of introduction.
Themselves, no?
Yeah, themselves. If I can start with myself.
Yeah, like, now, there are things we must exclude there, like how many goats and cows you have,
yeah,
and how much lobola was paid, you paid, those
why
will get another.
That?
No, but that's too much detail for the purpose of this meeting. Yeah.
I'm a member of the department.
Over to you, DM.
Yeah, after, let me just set an example of the introduction. My name is Regina Mahawule. I'm the Deputy Minister, Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Thank you, Ned.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Colette Makaya. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Africa.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Cassandra Mwene Mugoni. I'm the Chief Director for Southern Africa.
Morning, Chair. My name is Karuna Tsengiu, Chief Director, West Africa.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tandy Kamelis. I'm the Deputy Director on the Bridge Station.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Nkumbi Kerara from the Ministry of Office.
My name is Jafan Mataba, I'm the Parliamentary
Officer of the Senior. Thank you. My name is Sita Gombale, Ambassador in Israel, currently here in South Africa, also serving in the Parliament of Ministers with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Babu Mtagas, I'm going to tell you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Wadita Itai, CEO of DECO.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and your senior officials. Can we, Secretary, can we note apologies, please?
Thank you, Chair. We have two apologies, one from Honorable Mashabela, she is attending another meeting, and also Honorable Kalyan, who has also requested to be excused.
referring to Honorable Kalyan here? Oh, okay. you know, in Africa they would call you quiet missus. Quiet missus. Kalapa?
Chair, just an excuse for myself at 11 for the parliament engagement with the parliament of Japan.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Honorable Lissoma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Mpumlane has apologized. He's just gone to the Justice Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Ms. Tai Tai?
Honorable Chair, Minister Sikuli is currently attending cabinet meeting. She plans to join later.
Oh. Okay, noted. Okay, with that, thank you very much. The apologies are so noted. Then we are going to take three presentations. Now, the department was requested to make preparations for these three presentations. And it is a standing item, or is it a standing position or view of the committee, that with so many political developments in the world, some within countries, some within institutions, the SADC, AU, United Nations, G77, those are institutions, and many others, and countries. There are even civil wars, there are elections, There are so many changing dynamics, and this committee can never have enough time to be briefed about all these developments. And the expectation is always that within this parliament, that the members who serve in this committee know the world like the palm of their hands, and it is not always true, because things are evolving every day and they are not yet in the textbook. So you are our textbook. So that's why we would always request you as the fundis in this area of work to brief us. With that, I'm going to defer to the Deputy Minister, who will be assisted by you. She will know better who will present on each of the topics. The first one is the briefing by the department on the outcomes of the 10th BRICS Summit held on the 25th and 27th July 2018 in Sandton here in South Africa. Over to you, Deputy Minister. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. As you indicated, the first briefing will be on the outcome of the 10th BRICS Summit held on 25th to 27th July, Sandton, South Africa. Chair, if maybe we may start, the theme of the BRICS itself was BRICS in Africa, collaboration for inclusive growth and shared prosperity in the fourth industrial revolution. And as we know, it's a meeting of heads of states, especially the five countries, but this time, because we felt it's BRICS in Africa, we invited the economic zones of the
African continent,
as well as all leaders of SADC were there. But we know that we started with the outreach programs touching the youth, touching women, though the women part was not concluded, but touching business forums, etc., so that when the summit itself comes, all the issues are in place. So the DDG is not here necessarily, but we have a deputy director from the desk who will present the technical part of it, because we have prepared the slides. I want to, with your permission, Chair, give it to her to present. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Summit from 25 to 27 July at the Sandton International Convention Center in Johannesburg under the theme BRICS in Africa, Collaboration for Inclusive Growth and Shared Prosperity in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. We invited in the tradition established in 2013 when South Africa first hosted the BRICS Summit. We took the initiative to host a BRICS Africa outreach on the margins of the summit. We thought it prudent to continue with that initiative, and for the 2018 summit, we invited the heads of state and government of Rwanda, Ethiopia, Angola, Zambia, Namibia, Senegal, Gabon, Togo, Uganda, Jamaica, Argentina, Turkey, Botswana, the DRC, Lesotho, Madagascar, Malawi, Mauritius, Mozambique, Seychelles, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe. The BRICS Summit had an extensive agenda reflecting on the multi-sectoral and multifaceted nature of BRICS cooperation. The theme adopted for the summit is reflective of South Africa's core priorities, notably to strive towards the creation of an inclusive society and global partnerships that will bring prosperity to all humankind while focusing on the key trend that is currently the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The summit took a holistic approach and sought to align the adopted and endorsed past decision at the BRICS Summit and sectoral meetings, notably the Strategy for BRICS Economic Partnership, in which South Africa as far back as 2015 already selected to lead on two sectors, namely manufacturing and mineral processing and science and technology and innovation, and the Science and Technology and Innovation Framework. Since joining BRICS in 2011, South Africa has sought and will continue to leverage its membership of the BRICS Forum to place the interests of Africa on the agenda of BRICS, and we similarly remain committed to advancing the interests and the practical development of this broader global South. On conclusion of the on the 26th of July, the BRICS leaders adopted the Johannesburg Declaration, which is the outcomes document of the summit that was negotiated during the fourth meeting of the BRICS Sherpas that took place from 19 to 25 July, also in Sandton. Although the South African calendar is ongoing until 31 December, the various BRICS ministerial and sectoral working group meetings that have already taken place in the period 1 January to 28 June, provided a concrete basis of both new strategies and tangible outcomes on which the BRICS leaders could positively reflect in the Johannesburg Declaration. As per BRICS custom, the Johannesburg Declaration reflects on the three pillars of BRICS cooperation, notably the global political security situation, global governance of financial, economic, and political institutions, and people-to-people relations. The BRICS leaders committed to the following core aspects of the BRICS agenda, which were further reflected in the Johannesburg Declaration. It should be noted that the declaration served as a collective affirmation of BRICS strategic cooperation by reiterating common positions, notably in reaffirming the centrality of the United Nations and the role of multilateralism in global governance institutions, and engendering a rules-based, transparent, non-discriminatory, open, and inclusive multilateral trading system as embodied in the World Trade Organization. The leaders also reiterated the need to strengthen multilateralism, and this is a commitment that was strongly supported by the BRICS outreach partners during their engagement on the 27th of July. Safeguarding and strengthening multilateralism and maintaining the centrality of the United Nations as the universal multilateral organization entrusted with the mandate for maintaining international peace and security, advancing global development and promoting and protecting human rights so as to build a brighter shared future for the global community.
The leader is committed to strengthening of multilateral institutions of global governance and the need for the comprehensive reform of the United Nations, including the Security Council, and they reaffirmed their commitment to the World Trade Organization. The implementation of the United Nations 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and its 17 Sustainable Development Goals to ensure equitable, inclusive, open, all-round, innovation-driven and sustainable development was also at the fore of the discussions amongst the leaders. The leaders emphasized the three dimensions of sustainable development, economic, social and environmental, and reinforced their commitment as the BRICS Forum to the Paris Agreement on Climate Change. BRICS industrial cooperation was also highlighted by the leaders as critical to BRICS development, as it was vital to fostering greater convergence on industrial capacities and policies, new industrial infrastructure and standards, as well as small, micro, and medium-sized enterprises, more notably in the context of the fourth industrial revolution. In noting the global security challenges and threats faced by the international community, the BRICS leaders highlighted the need for BRICS countries to further enhance cooperation on peacekeeping matters. They received a briefing from the chair of the BRICS National Security Advisors, who reported on the outcomes of the National Security Advisors ministerial meeting that took place on 28 June, just prior to the summit. The leaders commended the NSA for enriching the BRICS dialogue on the global security environment, counterterrorism, security in the use of ICT, major international and regional hotspots, transnational organized crime, peacekeeping, as well as the linkage between national security and development issues. The BRICS leaders also engaged with the chairperson of the South African BRICS Business Council, who presented a work report on behalf of the collective, detailing the achievements of the council last year and outlining the activities still to be undertaken for the remainder of South Africa's chairship. The main outcomes of the 10th BRICS Summit were informed by South Africa's chairship priorities. These are, in the context of the fourth industrial revolution, as part of the key deliverables, the BRICS leaders endorsed the establishment of a BRICS working group on the fourth industrial revolution through the BRICS Partnership on New Industrial Revolution and its advisory group, consisting of representatives of the respective BRICS ministries of industry. In further support of these initiatives, the BRICS networks of science parks, technology business incubators, and small and medium-sized enterprises was also established. South Africa also put forward the proposal for the establishment of a BRICS vaccine research center to be hosted in South Africa. The objective of this is to strengthen coordination and cooperation amongst the BRICS partners so as to address common challenges in the field of health. And this was endorsed by all BRICS leaders. The Women's Forum. The promotion of inclusive growth is vital to the development of BRICS societies. Women are critical in ensuring that this objective is realized. The ongoing work of BRICS and the establishment of the BRICS Women's Forum and the BRICS Women's Alliance is appreciated, and it is expected that their first meeting will take place in the latter part of 2018. Peacekeeping. The BRICS leaders highlighted the need for BRICS countries to further enhance mutual communication and cooperation on peacekeeping matters at the United Nations through the establishment of a working group on peacekeeping. BRICS Working Group on Tourism. The initiative to establish a BRICS Working Group on Tourism was welcomed and is seen as a means of increasing economic development and people-to-people relations, thus further contributing to increased intra-BRICS tourism. Foreign Affairs Spokesperson. The BRICS Foreign Affairs Spokesperson's platform was acknowledged by the leaders and work is ongoing. The objective is to ensure that there is a consistent open channel of communication amongst the BRICS leaders, even in the period not covering the summit. The BRICS Africa Outreach Dialogue and the BRICS Plus. In continuation of the BRICS tradition of outreach, first initiated by South Africa in 2013, the BRICS leaders met with the African leaders, including the chairpersons of the African Union, of of the African Union, of the NEPAD heads of state and government, and they also recognize the regional economic communities of the AU Commission, of the regional economic communities and of the AU Commission, as well as the SADC. Following the BRICS Plus initiative set by China in 2016, the BRICS leaders also met with leaders of the Global South, notably Argentina in its capacity as chair of the G20 for 2018, Jamaica as chair of CARICOM, Turkey as chair of the Organization for the Islamic Cooperation. The 2018 edition of the outreach was a joint meeting with leaders from the continent and those from the Global South. Discussions centered on BRICS support for Africa's industrial and infrastructure projects as contained in the NEPAD program and the African Union's Agenda 2063, and on the implementation of the UN's 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and the building of broader partnerships. As the current chair of the African Union, President Paul Kagame highlighted the wider benefits that BRICS could bring for Africa's young population, particularly as it relates to industrialization and infrastructure development. He noted that the fourth industrial revolution brings with it the capacity to stimulate change and to change the nature of free trade agreements, as well as the manner in which Africa does business with itself and with the world. The interventions by the SADC leaders and the heads of the RECs dealt primarily with issues such as BRICS holding the promise of support for combating common challenges of environmental change, illegal trafficking of resources of island states, the need for human development, beneficiation of local resources, development of industries with the most potential for job creation, such as tourism, agriculture, infrastructure development, the health sector, transport and communication, interconnectivity, energy resource utilization, and the use of language commonalities, particularly in Swahili in East Africa. BRICS has the potential to be a driver of infrastructure development and social cooperation among some of the biggest developing countries and emerging economies of Africa. The spillovers of the current volatility in world markets makes it more important to enhance unity in four key areas. These are expansion of the BRICS Plus initiative, given the historic linkages, common challenges, and the ready platform that it presents for inclusive cooperation, to become new drivers for development by forging partnerships and innovation as derived from complementarity and existing and evolving synergies, to utilize the existing favorable environment of the BRICS dialogue as a bulwark against the challenges of protectionism, and to build a new type of international relations based on mutual respect, thus sending a clear message that the 2030 agenda is a development agenda of consensus amongst BRICS nations and its dialogue partners. On the margins of the summit, three agreements were concluded. These are the Memorandum of Understanding on Regional Aviation. The objective behind this is to expand and deepen cooperation among the BRICS competent authorities in the fields of public policy and best practices in regional connectivity, amongst others. The Memorandum of Understanding on the Environment. The objective of this MOU is to develop cooperation amongst the BRICS competent authorities in the fields of air quality, water, biodiversity, and climate change, amongst others. And also, finally, the host country agreement between Brazil and the New Development Bank on the matter of Brazil hosting the New Development Bank's regional office for the Americas. The objective behind this agreement was to set in motion the host country agreement that will allow Brazil to host the second regional center of the New Development Bank. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether we have to take all the presentations and we'll discuss it some after all we debate each presentation. This is the presentation outcome of the summit.
Not quite debate, but questions and comments from the members in a forecast way. But not all. At least it could be two. You know, Asenze, let's discuss this one separately and take the two because they pertain to elections at least. Can we have comments? Honorable Dudley, welcome, and Honorable Maela. Honorable Maela came in with Honorable Dudley. Okay, members, are there any comments? We must congratulate the department for making South Africa proud over the years, for pulling very successful big international events. You know, members will remember that until 2010, we did not know that the totality of the ability and capacity to host events like this constitute your CV as a country to host other events. We're able to argue when we wanted to host 2010 that we had the Rugby World Cup, we had this and this and this and this and this and this, therefore we can. And this is just one of the building blocks towards such a capacity as a country. Now, I want to hear the members. Honorable Mkhalapa, oh yes, I received a note that Honorable Litera will join us late, ne? Honorable Mkhalapa?
Thank you very much. Definitely let me also send my congratulations to the department on the hosting of the BRICS. Just to mention the fact that politically the BRICS and the disappointment should have been about the involvement of Parliament. I think us as the committee, we were not involved in the whole program. Suffice to say that we were just invited for the cultural program, that's all. But in as far as the discussions, we were not driving there to those. I'm not sure if it's the issue of separation of powers issue or was it just a deliberate thing. But on a substantive issue and matter is the issue of the trade deficit between the British members. Was it discussed on the table? I do understand that the theme was about the fourth industrial revolution, but you said comes the impact of trade. Have we evaluated the trade deficit that has existed between the countries who are making the bloc and the essence of the BRICS plus and the trying to incorporate as many as members for the BRICS. What is its impact in terms of the BRICS functionality moving forward? Second is the issue of the trade war between China and the US. Are we as South Africa very aware and alive to the fact of fighting proxy wars that we should not necessarily be a part of? It might be a global issue because of the two biggest economies are engaged in a trade war. But what does it mean for us in South Africa? Are we there as a proxy, fighting a proxy war for China between China and the US? And what does it mean for our bilateral relations with the US? Because of, I think they are looking keenly into what we pronounce in terms of this this war between China and the US, and what is our impact and our role and the use of BRICS to fight that fight that doesn't necessarily belongs to us, even though it might be affecting us. But when we look at the issue of AGOA and the sensitivities around it, and us being involved in the mass trade war between China and the US using the BRICS. So what is the impact? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhalapa. let me note all the hands. Honorable Raput is going to follow, and then Honorable Kenya, and Honorable Kalyan. Honorable Lekwata, welcome. The meeting has started. An organizer, who published the secretary of UPS. That's what he was that time.
Yeah.
Honorable Put.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Welcome, Honorable Lukota. We did receive your apology, ne? Yes, we did.
For the presentation, and I think really it was pride for us as South Africans that this summit was held here in South Africa.
Sorry, Ganyan. Honorable Mpumlwa, come this way. We will create space for you. Not far from the chair. Yes, that's all right. Is that about Mpumlwana? Because the place is that color. Over to you, Honorable Raput.
Yeah, you can see that some of the key outcomes of the Chemtrix Summit. And I'm really proud that they even came with the development of women forum, which I also think that South Africa, if they can really try to encourage, especially when we are celebrating the centenary of Mazisi. So this women forum, I don't know,
You're waiting for the, yeah, just hold on your comment a little bit.
Okay.
So that the minister can respond to it.
Good morning again. There's a lot of movement.
Yeah, and I'm very uncomfortable with it. Very uncomfortable, Mama. Honourable Minister, most welcome. We earlier on noted your apology that you would grace our meeting with your presence after taking a turn at the cabinet meeting. And again, we want to extend our warm welcome and to indicate that you could be released at your earliest convenience. There are two items remaining. There's a second speaker on the floor on the first item, which has just been discussed, the outcome of the 10th BRICS summit has been presented by the Deputy Minister, assisted by the senior officials of your department, and members are just about to take turns making their comments and asking questions. Honorable Raputi is now on the floor. Honorable Raputi,
thank you very much for the standing work that the Department of International Relations is doing, especially with hosting the 10th BRICS Summit. You can see that they've got key outcome of the 10th BRICS Summit. My comment and my emphasis is on the issue of women forum, which I believe that we need to encourage that South Africa must take a lead in that regard, especially when we are celebrating the 100 years of the centenary of the likes of Mazisi. So hoping that we will be able to take a lead in that so that we can be able to, you know, to show that as South African we are taking women issues as a priority. And also, I still remember when we were debating on the peacekeeping missions, there are lesser women. And Minister and Deputy Minister, we are really requesting that if we can have more women in this peacekeeping mission, especially in this arena, the BRICS community. I can also see that there is also they're creating the memorandum of understanding on the issue of aviation, which I think is also very important, especially here in Africa, because just going to Senegal, it takes such a lot of hours, when you can just take like about 8 hours. You have to go via what? Just going even to Gambia. Going to Gambia, we have to go to France, and then we must get a connecting flight to go to Gambia. So we really applaud, and you know, the agreement that BRICS has agreed with. So South Africa, take a lead and come with some proper deliverables, especially the time frame, because we really want to see this thing being implemented. But my plea, Minister, on the women forum, even on the peacekeeping missions, even also in Bosnia, we really request that take a lead in that, and especially that when we are celebrating our icons for Mama Masisulu. Not to say that Masisulu is your mom, but we are really feeling proud that such women, they really emancipated us. And those are the women who made us, who made that organization like BRICS being formed. So we are really proud for that. I thank you.
Honorable Kenya, thank you very much, Honorable Raputi.
Thank you, Chapati. Thank you for the presentation. I think I share the same sentiment with Honorable Mkhalapa when it comes to this summit. But at least now, we have got information now this time, and we've always complaining about not getting anything what I aspired from this summit. Now, yes, of course, I've got something that we also understand that a lot is shown in this document. But just to be called for cultural activities, really, from Parliament straight to Johannesburg, just to go to the cultural activities, I don't think it's fair. Anyway, maybe there's a protocol. Who are supposed to be there. On the Johannesburg Declaration, yes, I understand that on this declaration, also it is said that where the collective affirmation or this strengthening multilateralism, I think really that is important, because as we are also looking on the multilateral trading system, which is embodied in the World Trade Organization, that is applauded. Also, but I'm worried about the issue of African peer review mechanism. I don't hear anything that talks to it here on this document. I don't know, and we always complain about not getting anything from African peer review mechanism. What is happening? We don't understand what the name is there, but we don't know what is happening. If we can get clarity, why is the APRM not taken seriously. I understand that you are talking about the SDGs, 17 SDGs of the UN 2020 agenda, but if we can get something that talks to APRM. And lastly, also I'm also I'm talking about industrial cooperation, which is also critical. It highlights development on the fourth industrial revolution. But I think that is my main aim is on the issue of this APRM. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kenya. Thank you very much. Honorable Kalyan, you are on the floor now.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Minister. Nice to see you at our meeting.
Once again.
The presentation is a good one, but it lacks the detail in terms of implementation. As a committee, we are here to do oversight, and as my colleagues have expressed in disappointment, I did that last week as well, that we cannot do our oversight if we're not invited to some of the because of, you know, security clearance and all that. Notwithstanding, on page 10, we talk about the peacekeeping and enhancing communication at the UN, so the establishment of a working group on peacekeeping. So what is the collaboration with the AU? Because the AU's mandate is also to keep peace on Africa. What is the relationship there? On slide, on page 10, you talk about the platform for foreign affairs spokespersons, and that is to open a channel of communication. Is this not a duplication of the function of the heads of state? Page 13, I know in some instances the head of state would delegate to the ministers of foreign affairs to go and act on their behalf, but by creating a separate platform, what is it that they're going to be doing? Is this now the idea of a dual relationship? Will it be a decision-making platform? Page 13, so to expand the BRICS Plus initiative, I know China has been making a move to include countries like Egypt, etc., to expand the initiative. What will that do to the original agreement that was engaged or agreed upon by the original BRICS? Also on page 13, there's a statement there. I must say that I have a good command of English, but this I just didn't quite understand. To utilize the existing favorable environment of the BRICS dialogue as a bulwark against the challenges of protectionism. What does that mean? It's a lot of words. What is protectionism, and what are the challenges that one faces in order to, that you need this, commitment. Then on the leaflet that looks at the collaboration, on page 3, the statement says we recall the 2005 World Summit and reaffirm a need for a comprehensive reform of the UN. What was done? How much of progress has been made, and what is South Africa's input on it? And lastly, Chairperson, thank you for indulging me. On page 8 of the commitment, we reaffirm our commitment for the political resolution of the conflict in Syria. Was that discussed? What action do we have, or what steps is going to be taken? I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalyan, for your insightful comments. Honorable Lesoma, you are on the floor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Minister and colleagues. Chair, I will say some points. I will not repeat them as raised by some of the honorable colleagues. I have faith to say that I will be opportunistic. You'll forgive me, Minister, on this one, on what I'm going to raise in terms of our relationship within the space of economic development and relationship, as it were, that is there any possibility, if it hasn't been discussed, moving forward, that can be looked at taking advantage of the crude oil in terms of if within African states that we can use in relation to the petrol hikes and all those things? Because also we are not only engaging in business relationship, but also to ensure that our citizens also benefit on that. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Soma. Can I invite more hands so that I'm the last to comment, or I can come in the meantime and I will invite comments. Minister, we've already thanked the department under your leadership and thanked South Africa under the leadership of the President for pulling a very successful event. I was saying to the colleagues here that when we were bidding for 2010, we actually used the big events that we hosted, the Rugby World Cup and many others, to say we have ability and capacity to hold events like this. It's good for a country, any country for that matter. There are just a few things I want to talk about. I have a bit of a half answer, but I'm just wondering why the theme was BRICS in Africa. I have a bit of a half answer. Perhaps that many African states were invited here as a BRICS plus, whatever that means. But I thought that I found that rather odd that it was called BRICS in Africa, because BRICS must be BRICS with a BRICS plus, whatever it is. And whether in future you're going to have BRICS in Asia, BRICS wherever. And I'm really asking this question I don't want to say suspicion, but from the fact that the African continent was seen as an important trade for other powers, west or east, and that this is in fact a very, I'm talking about a liberated Africa now, it's a good opportunity for the sovereign states of Africa to take advantage and also dictate terms about what they want and what they can do within structures like this. So, and having said that, BRICS itself, if you look at its democratic minister and colleagues, is a very huge market that any country, whether they are a grouping or any country, can actually take advantage of. And it being such a big opportunity as an entire trade community, the African continent alone is also a very big trade market, if you look at the African Continental Free Trade Area and the people that you have there, their age, their consumption patterns, etc., etc., etc. So now I'm saying this because each of the BRICS members need to take BRICS to the people, if you like, or to have an outreach of BRICS to the people, particularly young people, particularly people in the university, to say that we as this country, as India, as South Africa, are members of BRICS, and there are these opportunities for you. Those who are selling shoes, those who are selling that and that and that and that. I suspect, Minister, that BRICS has not been taken to the ordinary people. Well, not quite ordinary. Those who would want to identify opportunities, business people, But of course, go to the young ones. And let me make this example, but it's not on business. Was it last year? I suspect it was before last year. I had attended the SADC Parliamentary Forum in Zimbabwe, so I was not in, and my colleagues here received, was it 30 or so, young Chinese people. My colleagues here were impressed with the level of depth, the level of clarity, the level of understanding where China is headed to, their ability or critical analysis of South Africa and Africa. And my colleagues were saying, you know, it's important, Chairperson, that we also have young people like this fished out from provinces, fished out from universities, who will be us in future, that we can unleash to the world to speak for South Africa. That must have been 2016. It was 2016. Yeah. Well, I was not there, but this is what the colleagues were saying, and this is something that we could do, and the minister already has that resource within the department that you can look at. Now, and I was going to ask whether South Africa is able, taking this matter to its business people, etc., etc., able to pursue to the extent possible our national interest in terms of business in this. And I'm not saying it in its narrow sense that you want to gain and you alone, you and the others, but in the nature of international trade, every country goes in it for something for themselves. Of course, sometimes it can be for security reasons, but that is still something for yourself. And lastly, it might be a bit unfair to take this one to the minister expect the minister to answer for the African continent. But I must say, Minister, me and Honorable Mkhalapa sit in the SADC Parliamentary Forum. One of the things that was identified there in two sittings, well, the other time we discussed this matter was in Zimbabwe, the other time was in Seychelles, that the industrialization pace of the African continent is a bit too slow. And suggestions were made that perhaps certain regions can pull their muscles together and work together to sell and hone their skills on diamond, the others perhaps on gold, the others on timber, like your DRC on timber because it has huge timber, and others, then they can produce furniture rather than just sell raw material. Others can deal with water, your Lesotho and the DRC itself with the huge dams and the Zambezi River there. You know, countries can just play to their competitive strengths. Then in this way, they can actually bring their skills together to deal with that which could be good for them. I'm not sure if the European Union actually does that. I'm not sure. But the reason why I'm saying this thing is because even within the BRICS community, you may find that we are latching into the fourth industrial revolution when, in fact, we've never been to the third industrial revolution ourselves. So what that means is that we will be consuming what others are producing, to paraphrase Professor Lumumba. And it's important that we get into industrialization, we get into innovation, something. Even if now we are not there, but in the next 15 or 20 or 30 years, we could be there. Yeah, I think this would be my comment. I want to invite some comments more on this one, then we step off it. absolutely right.
Thank you.
Over to the minister and the deputy minister and the officials. Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. I had to start in cabinet, so I was not here when the presentation was made, but I think that I was able to follow some of the questions as they were asked, and that which perhaps I have no direct response to and has been in the presentation, I will defer to both the Deputy Minister, the DG, DDG and his team. The first one I came across is, why was the Portfolio Committee not invited? I've been a member of Cabinet from the inception of our joint venture as part of BRICS. Not even Cabinet is invited. So it is not a given that we will be invited to a summit of heads of state. We host it, but we're not heads of state, so we're not invited. Only those ministers that have a direct responsibility were invited to BRICS. In this case, it would have been Minister for Telecommunication, because we're discussing the fourth industrial revolution, and it would have been the Minister of Trade and Industry. It would have been the Minister of Finance, because we have the Net Bank. It would have been the Minister of Health, because we were launching the vaccine center. They were not invited into the BRICS discussion. The only people who were invited into the BRICS discussion is myself and the President. So it was a closed session. It was not a public session. The reason why it was called a BRICS outreach is because other heads of state were invited, but they were not invited into the BRICS discussion. They were invited into the BRICS plus discussion, and it was a closed session. Summits are by their very nature a closed community. We hosted them, and because we were hosting them, we had decided to make maximum use of this advantage and create forums. So there were forums created. There was an academic forum which would be discussing what is there in it for us from BRICS. So the academic forum consisted of all the academic institutions in our country. They were invited to discuss BRICS, but they were not invited to BRICS. There was a women's forum which took a long time to get off the ground, and we were not able to conclude. There was a youth forum. The youth met and indicated, sent a declaration to summit to say this is what we as a youth would like to see out coming out of this conference. There were many other forums. My suggestion would be that perhaps we should have a parliamentary forum for BRICS. Then in that case, you'd be kept abreast of what it is that is being discussed in BRICS. But BRICS is a group of heads of state. Cabinet is not invited. Parliament is not, the speaker is not invited. The judges are not, nobody is invited. It's a closed session. And what is discussed in there is a closed session. We take advantage of hosting it to popularize the fact that we are part of BRICS. We are part of BRICS because BRICS is an association of South-South countries that operate on a new paradigm of equality. Nowhere is there a forum where we participate on an equal forum with everybody else. The United Nations would possibly be one of those fora, but even there you find in the National Security Council only a few countries have the veto power. We participate and our voice is lesser than those who have more economic muscle. In BRICS, we are all equal, and therefore we wanted to sell the idea that it is possible to do things differently, it is possible to fight against protectionism, it is possible to fight against unilateralism. The way that we would like to see the world unfold is a more multilateral approach, where all are equal, because we have sovereign rights over our own country. So that is why I'm sorry that you were not invited, but perhaps in the next BRICS we will have a portfolio committee, suggestion that we have a BRICS forum for parliamentary forum, and in that way you would have been invited. We invited the public, and we started with the portfolio committee, speaker, other members of cabinet and speaker to the open sessions, which were the dinner and the cultural activity, because there we had the right as the hosts. It was no longer about BRICS, it was about us entertaining our visitors. So we took the advantage of that to invite you. And I'm sorry that the protocol was not what it should have been. BRICS moved from BRICS Plus to BRICS Outreach, and almost overnight we had something from 4 countries to 10 countries to all of SADC countries, and it became impossible for us to arrange. So if there was any glitch, our first responsibility was to make sure that our guests are looked after, and next time we will make sure that perhaps we will ask you to come and help us with the protocol, because you are we did that when I was when I was Minister of Intelligence. The portfolio committee came to assist us when we launched the AU. The AU was launched in this country, and we were responsible. The portfolio committee performed the responsibility of protocol, because they have the necessary grace and panache to be able to usher in heads of state, and also it made them feel included in what was happening. In this particular occasion, we did not feel comfortable enough. I'm fairly new in this committee. I could not have summoned you to come and assist me, but should we have another occasion, I'd like to summon you to come and assist me, because we do this on your behalf. We don't do it only on our behalf. We do it on behalf of the country, and you have the necessary sophistication to be able to look after our visitors. So I will remember that, and I hope you keep it on your program. The other question was will be answered by the DM. It has to do with the women and why women are always lagging behind. It's because we're still always oppressed. We haven't reached the stage of true equality. But the DM will answer, because I don't know how that question arose. APRM is progressing very well. It is actually now institutionalized in the AU. When we have, over a long period of time of running with APRM, and South Africa has been at the forefront of making sure that it is part and parcel of our governance institutions. For a long time, it has been on the sidelines of the AU, but now it is part and parcel of the functions of the AU. And we have a competent person there in the form representing us at the APRM, in the form of Dr. Eddie Maluka, who has been running the Africa Institute, and when there wasn't enough funding, we invited him to come, and he is running that, and it is working very well. Okay. My suggestion is that we ask him to come and present the South Africa's report to the APRM. It would be good for you to understand, because we are hoping that in time we can use the APRM as a stick that will measure how we are doing as a country. We are rated by rated agencies that don't understand our culture, that don't understand our background, that don't understand us. And Moody's and Poor and Poor, or is it Richer and Richer, they
Standard
do.
And Poor.
Standard and Poor. These are the people who assess us, gauge us, and give us a rating. And it is against that rating that we are able to either borrow more money or make headway in some of the financial institutions that we are affiliated to. We're hoping that we can create out of the APRM a strong enough entity that will be able to give an assessment,
a truly indigenous assessment of how we're doing, and we would like it to rate as, to be rated at the same level as Standard and Poor and the other rating agencies. It would be our own for ourselves. The other one was the implementation. There was a report given, and there was no implementation program on that report. My suggestion to my team is that we should put an implementation program and circulate it to the portfolio committee. I'm not sure specifically what that issue was, but we take note that you would want an implementation program. Our apologies that we did not put it in the documentation in front of you. It will be supplementary material circulated to you. Then there was a question around, I think it is the spokespersons, of why did we find it necessary to have the spokespersons of BRICS, BRICS spokesperson? Why did we create a platform for...
This is so important.
Okay. Now, how these international organizations run, or international conferences run, is first there will be what are called sherpas. These are officials. They put together the document and prepare it for the ministers of foreign affairs. They present it to the ministers of foreign affairs, and the ministers of foreign affairs go through the document and prepare it for the heads of state. It is a process by which we arrive at some of the programs and decisions we arrive at. The ministers of foreign affairs meet about 2 years. Can I have some more time? Sorry, meet about 2 months before the actual conference, and they prepare for the conference. In the same way as Parliament, in the same way as Parliament has a portfolio committee, the question is, why do you have a portfolio committee? It is to prepare for that particular specific department and present that to Parliament, and Parliament then considers it. It's a process of processing information and putting together what is priority and what is not priority. And finally, the declaration is accepted by the ministers of foreign affairs. They are a conduit to the final declaration and sign off and remove what is necessary from what is absolutely necessary. And we find it very useful that because between summits we meet and discuss the program of action and make sure that it is implemented. We, in fact, are the DGs of the summit, and we run, in between summits, we run the program of BRICS. And then the other question was expansion of program. What does this do? I'm not sure what that question was. It was a question to something that had been presented. I'll leave it to the Deputy Minister. What is protectionism? Protectionism is the opposite of multilateralism. Protectionism is when a President Trump comes into becomes head of state and decides that it is America first, American interests first, and I'll protect American businesses first, and I'll protect what is in the interest of America first. And everything else will be secondary to my foreign policy. We believe in multilateralism, where we come together as equals, and we make sure that we are as inclusive as possible, and we do not exclude anybody, we do not have punitive measures against anybody in terms of tariffs. When we put in place tariffs, these are negotiated tariffs with the people who are affected. Because protectionism protects the interests of a particular country, and when it is a strong country, those of us who are smaller countries suffer the consequences. Those who are bigger countries and respond to protectionism, they respond by giving equally what they get. So we have these trade wars,
And we, the smaller countries and smaller economies, suffer in the process. Mm-hmm. And it is not good for development. It's not good for world international relations or world relations either. Reform in the UN system, we have been at this matter for a very long time. SADC had a session on the UN reform process. We, as the outsiders, who have been outsiders looking in on the reform on the UN, have been very concerned that we should reform the UN. We should reform especially those areas that deal with the security in the Security Council. 60% of the matters that are discussed in the Security Council are matters that affect Africa and the developing world. And we're excluded from decisions that are taken there. And we would like to reform that. We would like every region in the world represented at the UN to have equal say in the Security Council. And that is one of those issues that we have been punting for, and we still would like that kind of reform. And at the we will distribute to two members the Ezulwini declaration, at which SADC took a very decisive step on matters of how we are going to take this forward. So we have been dealing with this matter for quite a long time. Crude oil for Africa, this will help us. Yes, we are making headway with finding crude oil in Africa. Every country in Africa that has a sea surrounding it seems to be finding oil except South Africa. I think we must be a blighted. I have no idea. We are a blighted country, but we depend on other people and good relations with other people. When Ghana was here on a state visit, the president of Ghana indicated that he would make available to us some oil resources at a favorable rate, because he is exploring further oil. We have been given favorable terms by the Nigerians in our bilaterals, and we are hoping that we can get favorable terms in oil so that we can lower the price of petrol, because it drives everything up, and our consumers suffer the negative effects of our not having any oil available to us at a price that we can control. BRICS in Africa. Why was BRICS in Africa? Because we would like to take ownership too of that which we are part of, and we wanted to expose Africa, and we wanted to expose BRICS to Africa. We wanted to also lay claim to the fact that we are hosting BRICS, and we put up the cultural activity to educate BRICS members about Africa and African culture, and I'm told half of you fell asleep, but we will improve on that one. It wasn't quite the best of our performances, but we had wanted to make it as African as possible. Next time we will make sure that we do it proper. We were not particularly proud of it ourselves, but that we wanted to show that you are welcome in Africa. We want to attract them further to understand what we have in this country. This country is one of the most beautiful countries in the world. We have sites that are a must-see for most people. If we can attract them to our country, our tourism sector will gain significantly out of that. And we would like to make sure that we can grow our economy from those things that are natural, and we don't have to put too much into it. And we wanted at the center of the discussions around BRICS, the issue of the development of Africa, which remains in many instances an underdeveloped, war-torn continent, should be part of our discussion. What did we gain out of BRICS? What we gained out of BRICS is, we're talking about it now, we're talking about the gains that, the fact that we're able to attract all these countries to us, and we're equal partners. We have a BRICS bank, which is now up and running, and it is a very significant stride for us and developing countries. What you need for us, we have a virtual vaccine center that is able to assist us to deal with some of the infectious diseases that we are experiencing that we have no resources to foretell or to respond to. Chairperson, I think I'll end up there because otherwise I could take the whole day. there was a question that you asked, Chairperson, about why the fourth industrial revolution when we have hardly experienced the third industrial revolution. You know, women in this country have been held back for so long that we could easily have said, but why should they be allowed in parliament when they actually don't they haven't even gone through their own liberation? But we are at this point, and we would like to interact at this point. The world is in the fourth industrial revolution, and we would like to interact in the fourth industrial revolution. We will therefore have to leapfrog into the fourth industrial revolution. It is a reality. In most countries, and we are also very concerned, because in most countries, robotics is taking over the work that would otherwise be done by normal people. So it might not... We would need to have a protectionist response to the fourth industrial revolution to say we need to protect jobs. While we're part of the fourth industrial revolution, we need to protect jobs and create jobs as opposed to fast-tracking and having some of these gadgets dumped on us. Industrialization, we now have signed the Africa Free Trade, and most countries in Africa are part of that Africa Free Trade Zone. So we will be able to trade very freely in Africa. It is a significant step in our trading relations in Africa. It's taken us a long time, but we are there now. I think only 6 countries are outstanding in signing this.
We need to rectify.
Pardon?
We need to rectify it.
No.
Just from a Pan African Parliament perspective, it's really 2 countries have rectified, and in order for this to become effective,
yes.
So South Africa is one of them. I don't know if you've received the note verbal yet.
Yes, we have. We discussed it at the last SADC meeting. Because we went through which countries are ready to ratify, we are ready to ratify. So if the Pan-African Parliament has given its nod, after you clean up the mischief in the Pan-African Parliament, we would be very ready. we would be very ready to ratify it. Thank you. No, actually, at the next meeting, I'd like to invite myself, and then I can report to you the discussions around the Pan-African Parliament that we had at the African Union so that you're able to take it forward. Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sorry, but Chairperson, just on the UN matter, distributing the Isomini agreement, I don't think is what I'm looking at. We now have a special envoy, Mr. Fahad, and also we'll be taking up our seat. So I'm saying, what is our plan of action as part of the reform?
Okay.
Yeah, I'd rather add yours than...
Minister, I didn't hear you on the issue of the establishment of the UN forum.
Okay.
How far is it?
Yes. Okay. What we did, because we were hosting BRICS, we divided up the fora into those sectors that belong into those ministers that are responsible for those sectors. Mm-hmm. Minister Batabi Lezamini is now currently the minister of responsible for women.
Mm-hmm.
She's responsible for the Women's Forum,
mm-hmm.
and she came to report to us as an interministerial committee that the women had not completed the work of the Women's Forum,
mm-hmm.
and therefore they would require more time. We have given them an extension because BRICS is not an event, it's an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we can still have a women's forum sometime this year or sometime next year, but it is a standing item. It just did not serve its report to BRICS Summit.
Men's forum.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you very much. We will move towards the second item. I have just been reminded by the content advisor that we do have the BRICS parliamentary forum.
Oh.
And she was indicating the date at which that was attended by the chairperson of the national Iman Convent. Was attended by Honorable Thandi Modise in 2016, and the date was shown to me. So it is existing.
Okay.
What happens here in Parliament is that we've got the focus groups, and I convene one of the focus groups, and then we've got the SADC Parliamentary Forum, BRICS Parliamentary Forum, you've got the CPA Africa, you've got the IPU. There are many structures to which you are attached as members of Parliament. So it's not possible to know everything as International Relations Committee. when we discussed this weakness and limitation, we thought that we could have a conferment with other committees from time to time so that we can be reported to. For instance, Honorable Kalyan has always wanted to bring issues of the PAP, and we never found time and space to get one of the members of Parliament to say, you know, this is what is being discussed for the continent, and this is how this continental parliament is linking up with the European Parliament and all those things. So these are just some of the weaknesses, things that could actually benefit a committee like this knowledge-wise. But otherwise it exists.
Okay.
And with that, I, with your permission now, shall we migrate to the next item, which is a presentation on the briefing by the department on the recent presidential elections in Zimbabwe. Honourable Minister, with your, to the Deputy Minister and your staff, we refer to you for a presentation. Minister?
Thank you. While I look for you want the long presentation or the short presentation?
Short.
Okay. And what I will be reading to you is what we as SADC have been given by our SADC observers, and which we have adopted because we have observer status in all elections in SADC, and our responsibility is to be on the ground, monitor what is happening on the ground, write a report, and that report is then binding on all member states unless they have a problem with any part of the report. And this is the report that was given out to SADC by the organ. The organ is that part of SADC that is responsible for elections and all other hotspots that we may experience. This is given by His Excellency Manuel Domingos Augusto, who is the Minister of External Relations of the Republic of Angola. And we were represented at this particular observer mission called SIOM by three people, former Minister Mdlazana, Shepherd Mdlazana, and a former ambassador, former Minister Dipuo Peters, and a former DG of State Security. He says, as you know, SADC has now employed a long-term election observer methodology, which has been adopted, and the principles and guidelines governing this are used to measure democratic elections. To this end, SADC deployed an Electoral Advisory Council in March that went ahead and thereafter deployed the observer mission. According to Section 158 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe 2013, general elections should take place not more than 30 days before the expiry of the five-year period in terms of Section 143 of the Constitution. By proclamation called the President, sorry, this I am reading in English. It was delivered in Portuguese. So if you find any grammatic glitch, it's not because I skipped my standard one English. It's because proclamation call, the president sets the date for general elections after consultation with the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and Independent Commission. Pursuant to Section 144 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, His Excellency Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa on the 30th May 2018 issued a proclamation setting the 30th July 2018 as the date of the president parliamentary and local government election, referred to as harmonized election. Harmonized because it was all three elections happening at once. The findings of the SADC observer mission. The mission wishes to share the following preliminary findings on the 30th of July 2018 in the harmonized election. Alongside the legal and constitutionally provided by the Zimbabwean constitution, the observer mission found that the right of all political parties to function and campaign freely within the law was upheld. The will of the people was demonstrated through elections which were peacefully done. They were free, they were fair, and they were done in a transparent manner. Three, state-owned media was impartial and afforded fair opportunity for the presentation of divergent views and options. It is on those three principles that, and having been on the ground, that the observer mission finally came to the conclusion and the declaration that the elections were free and fair. However, as you know, one of the parties has since lodged a complaint with the Constitutional Court, and we expect that tomorrow the Constitutional Court will be giving a verdict on the basis of the court case that will be heard tomorrow and concluded tomorrow. As far as SADC is concerned, we are led by the prescripts of our own constitution. When we send out an electoral observer mission, we are bound by the outcome of the observer mission and its findings. And this is what we adopted at the recent SADC meeting. And we were glad to see that all other observer missions, the AU observer mission, the EU observer mission, the Commonwealth observer mission, all came to the same conclusion. However, we did add in the SADC meeting that was held in Namibia recently that it was unfortunate that, number one, a member contesting the election had declared themselves outside of the law that determines the electoral processes, declared himself a winner. It was unfortunate that there was a protest, and even more unfortunate that there were deaths in Zimbabwe. The president has since apologized about the president of Zimbabwe has since apologized to the people of Zimbabwe, and he has indicated that he will establish a commission of inquiry to find out what caused the riot in Zimbabwe, and why would the security forces have responded in the way that they have. So for now, we await the outcome of the Constitutional Court, but in terms of the law and the Constitution, President Emmerson Mnangagwa is the president-elect of Zimbabwe. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, for the presentation on the outcome of the presidential elections in Zimbabwe. I see that there are hands, and the first taker is Honorable Mayila, followed by Honorable Bachman, followed by Honorable Rafuti. Honorable Mayila, you're on the floor.
Thanks very much, Chair. And maybe let me take this opportunity to appreciate the presentation by the minister. You see, the issue that there is a court case actually limits us. We can just note the report, but there are issues that I need to check to talk to. One, just a clarity seeking question. What is the latest regarding the work permit for Mr. Mbofu and Mr. Ngugaitori?
But you have tried, yeah?
Okay,
yeah, I love you.
Sure. Now, two, the issue that the minister talked to about Mr. Chamisa actually declaring himself the winner after casting a vote, that needs to be condemned in the strongest possible terms. Because Mr. Chamisa was actually out of order. You shouldn't have done that.
Was what?
He was out of order.
Oh, I hear you.
There is also a stand which was pulled by Mr. Tendai Biti, pretending that he's being tormented by the Zimbabwean authorities when actually nothing was happening to him. As a ploy to make it seem as if things were not well in Zimbabwe. However, we will still await the outcomes of the court process. It will tell us what actually took place. Now, one other disturbing issue, Chair, is this thing which is now becoming almost a trend, that people will stand for elections and even before the election day declare that they are not going to accept the outcomes of the elections.
Yeah.
And now, you don't know why in the first place they enter the elections. They enter elections so that they can be winners, which is something, I think, maybe as a country or as SADC, we need to have a position on such issues, so that we actually try to because these are the issues that actually cause the unnecessary chaos immediately after elections, because in any way it has already been declared that the elections results will not be accepted even before the results are announced. And I think those are my issues. Thank you very much.
Yeah, your issues are very tough anyway. Thank you, Honorable Maila. Bergman?
Chair, thanks very much. I'm not playing judge or jury here. I'm just really an interested observer, because I actually share a lot of my colleagues' concerns as to the behavior on both sides. But it sounds like there's a tale of two stories here. It sounds like there's a ZANU-PF ANC side of the story, and it sounds like there's an MDC alliance side of the story. Now, in all these documents that we've got, they seem to know the numbers, but they don't seem to report the numbers. So we would be interested, where there was a conflict, where the MDC alliance seemed to have a conflict, was around the numbers, in terms of the number of people that voted and the number of votes that were counted. And if the rumors were to be believed, or the allegations were to be believed, that more votes were counted than votes that were, than ballots that were issued. So I'd be interested in those numbers. Secondly, in terms of the V11 forms, were 100% of those forms collected back from every VD, and were they signed by all the party agents? And I'm not looking for if there were seven party agents and three parties. I'm just saying, in terms of the general consensus, was that the party agents inside that polling station agreed with the V11 form and they signed the V11 form. But the biggest problem has actually been on the pronouncements of the of this inquiry. When it is actually going to be, when the inquiry will take place, or when such pronouncements would be made. I mean, 6 killings in a peaceful election, and when an election that's counted as peaceful, you know, we in South Africa have this diplomacy where we don't interfere in any other country unless it's Israel. Then we interfere. But here, we're talking about 6 people killed in an election, and we're saying, yeah, we support Zimbabwe, we support the results. And we should also maybe just be careful in playing judge in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Tasman, Honourable Waputi.
Yeah, thank you very much, Minister. My question, I think I'll put it like this. What is the position of SADC about the conduct of those who are candidate president? Citing the issue of the opposition who just went to the poll and coming out, then the declared himself a winner, and inciting such a catastrophe. So what is the position of SADC and the African Union in that regard? I thank you, because it's really painful. After such peaceful elections, then after that, people started fighting and all, just because of one reverend, a young reverend, as they say. I think so.
Honorable Raputi, you are mugging your water with this thing of age. Honorable Dudley.
Thank you. I will probably
be talking to
the diplomats here and not the politicians. So hopefully you'll get the gist of what I'm saying. Now obviously I appreciate also South Africa's usual stance of remaining, not taking sides and saying out of dictating to sovereign countries, whatever. But in this situation, Shamisa and Tenda Viti were in the heat of the passion of the people, not themselves. They had a huge onus on them because this was many, many people's sense that it was their moment. Now, just like the military coup, that was also the people's voice expressing itself. So we blurred the lines there, even especially me, because for the sake of peace and development and going forward, we didn't want it to be a coup. We wanted it to be what we decided it was, and we put it into the right diplomatic words. And in terms of Shamisa and Tenda Viti, I believe this should be handled diplomatically, and all of that should be put into perspective in terms of the pressure on them to express the people's concern and frustrations and whatever. So the people are not fighting for one man. The people are fighting for themselves and what they see. And of course, it doesn't matter how wrong or right they are. That's just how it is. So I'm speaking to people who understand diplomacy. I'm appealing to our country to be really on the side of a diplomatic solution and no heavy-handed, repercussions here. As I say, keeping in mind, we all wanted that solution. We don't technically want military solutions. We don't technically want coups. Mm-hmm. But we did want the voice of the people to come through. So it is a very tricky situation. I think that South Africa's done a good job positioning itself where it's positioned itself, and Zimbabwe's got to find its feet, and I think we have the kind of experience that can help give the present president the kind of courage to do these, magnanimous, gracious gestures of moving forward, taking into consideration the heat of the passion of the time. That's my thank you.
Mm. Thank you very much, Honourable Kenny.
Thank you for the presentation. Just one question. Maybe this question is also related on what Honourable Rabbi just said. I was watching that day on the TV. But to my understanding, maybe it's because of this, I don't know whether it's because of the sovereignty of the country. When I noticed Tenda Viti standing up just in front of the election being announced on the podium. And contrary to what is said here, saying that we as MPC didn't sign, and Salah didn't sign the 11 forms. Yeah, just before election, I mean, what is the take of SADC in that case? When just before the meeting, somebody is just stand up and speak on the podium in front of the election commission saying that we are disputing this. Just before election, we are disputing this because we didn't sign the 11 as the MTC alliance. What is the taking on that issue? Because that's what he did. And somebody fall into, it was a chaos to that. He was removed from the podium.
Sorry, do you know what is the V11?
The
V11
form.
It confirms the result.
Honorable Honorable Kalia,
okay.
Followed by Mbomluan.
Thank you, Chairperson. So the summit in SADC calls for the lifting of those sanctions imposed upon Zimbabwe. Where are we at in terms of what South Africa is going to do? How are we going to assist in terms of, are we going to be involved in mediation? Are we going to be involved in dialogue with the countries that have imposed sanctions? How is it going to work? So in one of the reports given to us, this is the preliminary mission statement, the SADC Parliament Forum election, it says that we commend the provision in the law for 60 quota seats for women in the National Assembly. But then in the preliminary statement of the Commonwealth Observer Group, it says, this quota expires after the term of the incoming parliament. Now, one of the outreach dialogues in terms of the BRICS is to engage in Zimbabwe was there. They have this quota system. If they're going to do away with it because it now expires after the term of the incoming parliament, what would the implications be? So we also know that one member of the opposition party, Tendai Biti, went to Zambia seeking asylum and he was refused there. So if he comes to South Africa and seeks asylum, what do you think would happen? I'm saying the devil's advocate. And then, Chairman, this is just a technical point, but we got reports from the EU and from the Commonwealth, etc. However, what is annoying for me is that there's already comment made on this report, like, you know, somebody's highlighted something. I would prefer to receive a report that doesn't have other people's opinions on it so that I could form my own opinion. For example, if I take the prelim statement by the EU, I'm just showing it to you, that it's done like this and then it's photocopied and given to me. I would like to form my own opinion, so I don't like to receive a report. In other places, I think one of the other ones, the SADC one, is circled and highlighted. So the Secretariat must take note that we, as members of this committee, must form our own opinions and not be guided by whoever read this document. Thank you.
Noted, Honorable Kalyan. Honorable Mpumlwana.
Thank you. I wanted to congratulate the department and the people of South Africa for their involvement in the Zimbabwe case. I wanted to find out is the results that were pronounced is very pitiful. And in fact, all the observers, are you agreeing, observers agreeing on that, including the European Union, including others, as well. I mean, is there anybody who says, perhaps I don't trust the military attention?
Minister, I will comment and make one or two questions. Perhaps the most important thing in terms of electoral law for any country. You go into the elections as a party, and you must submit as a party yourself to the authority of the Electoral Commission or Electoral Board, or whatever the name of that country, which is going to run the elections. Then you must accept the electoral
outcome.
So what one of my was saying about some of the candidates is saying that they will not accept the outcomes if they don't favor them, or just after themselves have voted, like the presidential candidate Chamisa, starting declaring himself a winner. But you see, that is water under the bridge. The issue now is whether the ZANU-PF, the MDC Alliance and others have been made to sign a form, if there is a form, which binds them to the fact that they will accept the court ruling. And I'm sure I'm understood where I'm coming from on this one. Because you see, if the AU, the SADC, the SADC Parliamentary Forum and others have already made their pronouncements and views and opinions are formed, and the former president is now a sitting president, and in between there is a court challenge. You know, what could happen is that depending on how many people are in each of the divides. If the MDC Alliance rejects the court ruling because it is not in their favor, such a thing could trigger a civil war in the country. And then you could have a government that says we've won the elections, clamping down mercilessly on them, resulting into debts and all manner of things. But on the other hand, the same thing could obtain. The court says, no, the current president, subject to certain witnesses, but they've won the elections. And the MDC Alliance, or did I say that one? Or they say the MDC Alliance has won, and people this side feel that, no, we're not going to get out of our offices, and the army supports them. So, it is, I'm just expressing a view that perhaps as a Parliament of South Africa, we, as people who champion human rights and democracy, must support our executive, our executives in this work of ensuring that to create conditions of peace in the continent, people must learn to subject themselves to the authority of the elections board, accept the democratic outcome of elections, and in some countries, Minister, people reject the results, and then the next day they've got the full-blown military hardware. You know, they are a rebel group. In other words, if the elections don't favor them, they are ready to go back to the bush, and the country will never experience development. These are some of the witnesses that are there. And lastly, that we've got to preach again, both in our parliament and those who are serving in other fora, that members of the opposition in each of our countries are are not enemies. Are not enemies of the ruling party. They are strategic opponents of the ruling party, who the ruling party must defeat at the level of the electoral battlefield. Or the ruling party must be defeated by the opposition at the level of the... It must be the superiority of ideas that each of the political parties put to the people that they can win their hearts and minds. Because if, whether you are a ruling party or you are an opposition party, you think the others are enemies and not strategic opponents. What it means if they are enemies is that they are not born of the same, they are not citizens of the same country, and they got 2% out of the citizens of the same country. You see? So, defeat them politically. Very important. I thought, I've said this, I've said it in the last meeting that we're in. I thought I must talk about this because if, doesn't matter whether now you are a ruling party or a weak party, if you don't accept that these are strategic opponents, when you take over, then you will revenge, and when you revenge, you are going to violate human rights, you will unleash civil strife, there will be no peace in the country, etc., etc. We in South Africa must assist in this regard. In fact, I saw that Judge Matimbini of Zambia penned out the outcome here.
Mm-hmm.
Where we were seated in a table, if I should just say, where we were seated in a table together with the other speakers, he actually said to me, you know, there was a time when we used to appreciate the views, the opinions, and the contributions of the South Africans. And we as a continent actually cry out for the leadership of South Africa. And he also named the ruling party in South Africa, forgotten his name. That it's important that they hear these views from us, because in some of the international fora, they are not listened to. But when this matter is raised by South Africa on human rights, on all that and that and that, they listen to South Africa because it has emerged from that kind of situation. This very Judge Martin being here. So we must make that contribution. And with that, Minister, there were some of the questions. Some of the questions and some of the comments.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to start with the last comment that you make. And I perhaps the best place to start is in this portfolio committee. That in the portfolio committee, we are not here as members of a particular political party. We're here as representatives of our people. And therefore, when we deal with international matters, there should be a consensus on a South African position. We have created around ourselves a culture where when any party has lost an election, we accept the necessary defeat. I am now talking to the honorable member from the DA. I cried my heart out when we lost Nelson Mandela, because it had our name, it had our footprint, and we'd been there forever. But I accepted it, and it is now a DA-led party. It is a DA-led metro, but it is still my home. If we could use that to ensure that we can influence other countries, that it's not the end of it. These are not your enemies. These are people who have worked harder than you at sending a particular message, and people have responded to that message. And the party that has been defeated needs to work harder at the problems that would have been identified. This is how democracy works. And Africa should begin to respond to democratic processes in that way. I want to apologize to Honorable Kalyan for the fact that we got a document from the DDG Africa. This is not a government document.
Yes.
It's his document, yes. Which he, as the DDG of Africa, got to and put together for us when we went to SADC. And it's the only document that was released. It is from SADC, and he had marked those areas where he himself had wanted to highlight. And it's the only document we had, and we photocopied it. If we had known there would be an offensive underlining, we would have either withheld the document or tried to reproduce it. I don't know if we have the copyright right to do that. Let me go back, and I'll also here be helped by the DDG Chief Director and the Deputy Minister. The question is, what is the role of South Africa now that this has happened and some countries have imposed sanctions? Our role is to await the outcome of the Constitutional Court finding tomorrow.
Okay.
Happily for everybody, the work permit for the two advocates has been granted. It is international practice that when you work in another country, you require a work permit, whatever the work is. And therefore, both advocate Mbofu and Mugaitobi needed to have work permits, and they are processed, and there is a normal time frame within which they are processed. They have now been fast tracked, and they are in Zimbabwe to present their case. And we will hear from the judge tomorrow what the outcome is, and it would be good if the portfolio committee takes a lead in accepting what the Constitutional Court says, whatever that would be. The portfolio committee can meet if there seems to be a crisis and go through the documentation, because the rest of Parliament is dependent on you to guide them on how we respond to this matter, which is on our doorstep. We would not want any sanctions on Zimbabwe, because we would like to see the level of development in Zimbabwe which the people of Zimbabwe deserve. We would like to see peace in Zimbabwe, which the people of Zimbabwe have deserved all this time. We've been on this matter because we wanted the best for the people of Zimbabwe. Like us, they deserve what we have, a normal democracy where they are free to live wherever and work and find work and improve their lives. I understand the point that Honorable Maila has raised, that the court case limits the portfolio committee's outcomes as we meet before the case, court case. But should there be any serious repercussions, I'm certain that the chairperson will convene the portfolio committee and look at the outcome of that and advise Parliament what steps to be taken, and the South African government will obviously take your discussion on the matter seriously.
Mm-hmm.
It has limited us. We met at SADC before the court case had given its verdict, and we acknowledge that there is still a court case pending, but in terms of the constitution of Zimbabwe, the ZEC has pronounced a president-elect, and we've got to recognize that until the Constitutional Court overturns that. And that is how we have been relating to this matter. The matter of Chamisa declaring himself a winner, at first I thought it was usefulness, just buoyant usefulness, but it is actually did work against a peaceful process, because this is my personal suspicion, that people who went out to the streets were rejoicing. And when they got to the streets and they discovered that actually it might not be the case, became very angry. I don't know, it's just my personal view. But it was irregular, and he should have known better. And we hope that perhaps next time it doesn't happen this way, because it did lead to unfortunate circumstances in an otherwise... I mean, the first day everybody was very happy, and I learned the word peacefully, very peacefully, and I used it very peacefully, because that is what the first few days were in Zimbabwe. And of course, in terms of the law, nobody can declare a winner of an election except the duly appointed, legally appointed body, and in this case it was the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission. And I actually must say that I was very impressed with the lady who conducted the the election. She seems very in control, very calm. It made me feel that, you know, perhaps we should institutionalize women running elections, because
sure.
It's true. In our case, we've had women running our elections. And when they do, it's a very rational process. We're not, I mean, women are very rational people.
Organized
and rational. That is, we can test it scientifically, you will find. I want to not comment on Tendai Biti, because the matter is he was refused entry and asylum by the Zambian government, and he went back to Zimbabwe, and I believe he was arrested and he's out on bail. And because there is a court process underway, I think it would be unfortunate for us to make any comments. The Tale of Two Cities. Honourable member from the DA.
Let me just help the minister. It's Honourable Bergman. I've got a great pain telling everyone that you're my parliamentary girlfriend.
That is why I'm at pains to call you Honourable Member of the DA, so that they know that our private life has nothing to do with
the lower levels. Come to me, I'm the chair.
I think for purposes of this, the Tale of Two Cities, I think we should try to limit the political overflow into a discussion of the city. I visited India when I was Minister of Defence. And I discovered something that was very interesting. It is part of the parliamentary rules that in an international relations portfolio committee or in a defense portfolio committee, there are no political parties. It is what is called in the national interest. Whatever is discussed is in the national interest. And so I'd like to say here in front of everybody to the honorable member of the DA, it is not an ANC ZANU situation. I think that for a very long time, all of us here have been very concerned about Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. It has been too long, and the world has not succeeded in doing anything on time about Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. And we hope for the people of Zimbabwe that we've come to the end of that, that whatever the outcome of the Constitutional Court, it will be accepted and we will return to normality. Mm-hmm. After hours, the Honourable Member of the Opposition and I will go and have dinner and work out what it is. It is too much detail. I think if there are any other questions that I have not... Yes, and he the Honourable Member lets loose Israel. I mean, Israel is not on the table right now. He'll come back later. And yes, but I think that everybody did agree that it was unfortunate that live fire was used in the situation. And I think when the President-elect did apologize and pass his condolences to the families of the victims, it was the right thing to do. I think we too, the best we can do is to regret that it happened that way, pass our condolences to the family, and hope that when the President, whichever President it is, goes through with the inquiry, we will find the root of this so that it doesn't happen to Zimbabwe again. I think I have I am done, Chairperson.
Yeah.
And we've taken note also of the comments that you've made.
And we also have taken note of the advice that our minister has given of looking at the Constitutional Court outcome and judgment and the reasons thereof as members of the portfolio committee. We'll do exactly that. The very last presentation by the department is on the the recent Malian presidential elections. I beg you? Okay.
I have a cabinet.
just a moment.
Honourable members, at this point I'd like to request to take leave of you because we have a cabinet meeting. I just asked to come over for an hour. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you. And you are too literally. Members, we are taking the last presentation. Perhaps let's have a 2 minute, without going out, just 2 minutes. Let's stretch. And then while the department prepares for the presentation on the Malian, on the outcome of the Malian presidential elections, and we should be done by around 10 past 12. Presentation plus discussions. It shouldn't be that much long. Yeah. We could be done by 12.
Yeah. The presentation is not long.
Now they are detaining the minister. Yeah, minister. There's a team. Mambe, let me eat your minister. The 1 minute is now over. The 1 minute is over. Can we allow people to walk in? Department, you can start your presentation. Mm. Who is leading the presentation?
DM.
Who are you deferring to speak on the Malian presidential election?
He's not here.
One.
Utsangiwe. Now to do the presentation.
But ininikeza yeah, ubani? Umakhaya. Then. Kalyan. Very sexy about, well, handing over to the department. Ambassador no Tai Tai Maila or Maila, together with the committee secretary, we want to take the last item. Masaba, crepe, whatever, now who's joining over? Yeah, the pipe, that's the way that God forbids that we start to have you seated. But it's not in the Bible yet. Oh, am I?
Yet.
Oh, Sipula umte toga mos in the Old Testament. Ikalum tanga no nginge eko. Nifuna ukuthi ningami. Mr. Tsengwe, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honorable Member. Guided by the approach adopted by our Minister, I am advised to opt for a shorter version of the presentation and not go page by page. With your permission, Chairperson.
Yes.
Elections in Mali were held on the 12th of August, this being the runoff between the leading candidates from the first the incumbent president, President Keita, and the leader of the opposition party, Somalia Sise. On Monday this week, the 20th of August, the Constitutional Court of Mali announced the final result. And in this regard, the incumbent president prevailed with about 57% of the court, and Somalia Sise, the head of the opposition, with about 33%. Now, the runoff follows a general election that was held on the 29th of July, where we had 24 candidates, presidential candidates, 24 of them, and as I indicated, the leading candidates out of that first round were the current president and the I think it's important to perhaps highlight the context within which these elections took place, especially given the fragile nature of the security situation in Mali. Mali is in a perpetual mode of a state of emergency. However, what is perhaps a source of conservation is the fact that the key observer missions in this regard, AU, ECOWAS, the regional body, and the EU, took note of this context, but in their pronouncement concluded that the elections were held under acceptable conditions, and that there was no tangible evidence pointing to gross irregularities. This position was confirmed by the Constitutional Court on Monday when they announced the final results. Of course, both sides had lodged complaints to the effect that they have observed some irregularities. The Constitutional Court adjudicated on these matters and concluded that they were ready to make the final announcement. And some of those complaints were rejected as inadmissible. The second point that I need to raise is that the turnout was not pleasing. During the first round, the turnout was sitting at about 42%. And during the runoff, which is the second round, the turnout was sitting at about 32%. Translated in numbers, you had about 8 million eligible voters. Only 3.5 million voters participated, all in all, which in our observation is a reflection, firstly, of the security situation in the country, but secondly, the fact that the elections took place during what is regarded in Mali as the rainy season, which makes it very difficult to navigate the territory, especially for would-be voters to be able to get to polling stations in time. The third point that perhaps I need to raise is that having announced the results on Monday, it does appear that the inauguration of President Keita will be taking place on the 4th of September. There was concern earlier relating to the fact that Mr. Sise, who was the second candidate, also fell into the trap of making announcements prematurely. He also indicated that immediately after he voted that he would reject the outcome of the election. However, as we're monitoring the situation even up to now, it does not appear that this has been translated into what we saw in Zimbabwe in the form of protests, but even not fatality. The only fatality that was reported was in the central part of Mali, where one of the polling station managers was killed. Other than that, we do not have any reports pointing to any other incident of violence. I must also perhaps, as the fourth point, Chairperson, indicate that Mali occupies a very strategic position geographically in the region. And as we speak, Mali is home to about five terrorist organizations operating in the north and the central part of the country. We are made to understand that these are the areas that were heavily affected, especially with regards to people being able to make themselves available to go and vote. Is sharing its borders or her borders with seven countries in the region. And so any semblance of instability in Mali has serious repercussions, not only for those six neighbors, or rather seven neighbors, but also for the Sahel region and the West Africa region as a whole. What is our position as South Africa with regards to our relations with Mali? We have very cordial relations with the country that are conducted through the mechanism of a joint cooperation for joint commission for cooperation, rather. And we have been having interactions with the Malians on a number of fronts. With regards to our economic cooperation, yes, the climate currently is not ideal or conducive for enhanced economic activity between the two countries. However, we are registering the fact that our economic diplomacy initiatives continue unabated. We have a number of South African companies operating in the area, especially in the gold or mineral sector. We are of the view that this economic cooperation can be further deepened once the security climate improves. Chairperson, let me leave it there and indicate perhaps as the last point that indeed, as South Africa, we guided by the position that has been taken by ECOWAS and the African Union with regards to their assessment of the election outcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tsangiwe. I would like to invite comments from the honorable members. Honorable Darman. Sorry, Honorable Darman, you want to fill us in? Mr. Mackay?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it's important for the portfolio committee just to understand the importance of money to the entire continent, particularly to sub-Saharan Africa. Ambassador Tsengiwe, the Chief Director, has highlighted quite well the security challenges that money faces. So in Mali, we are the continent experiencing the impact of the collapse of Libya. The rebels that he's talking about, the terrorist organization that he's talking about, all those managed to be well armed at the time when Libya was collapsing. The portfolio committee members would be aware that there was a lot of arms that were dropped in Libya. And those arms are all over the place. They are in the hands now of the wrong people. So the continent and the international community needs to do everything humanly possible to ensure that Mali does not fall, as you say. We've got the UN peacekeeping force that is there, and all the countries that are there need to be supported. And South Africa has been, for the past decade and a half, playing a critical role to assist the successive government in Mali. And I needed just to highlight that these elections were held under abnormal situations because the country is by and large not stable in terms of security. So I think it's very important. And also then for the solidarity that needs to be shown to them, as they are sort of in the front line to sub-Saharan Africa, ensuring that that instability does not come down south. I think that is very important for the members of this august committee to keep in the back of their mind. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Makaya. It was a very important add-on. Al Bahman?
Sure, I agree with that. I mean, the problem is that terrorism is already on our borders now with Mozambique. So we do share a responsibility of terrorism across the continent and not just in the north or the west. But yeah, I must say that I'm a huge fan of ECOWAS. And I wear another cap as the treasurer of the African Rebel Network. And I watch ECOWAS and I think to myself that there's a region in Africa that really is progressive, that really is pushing the boundaries and the milestones, and even with the advent of Sahel, you know, where they're actually fighting terrorism. But in terms of these results, the most glaring problem in these results is the fact that the Sisi didn't necessarily lose the court case on a right or wrong. He lost it on a technicality. And you know, in the report was that he had filed his complaint after the allotted time frame. But I think as the international community, we do have a job to play in terms of trying to neutralize the, any efforts against aggression or war, and try to bring peace and stability. And that would come from SADC, ECOWAS, from AU, all the bodies that we can think of. Both sides spoke about irregularities in the elections. Sisi spoke about the stuffing of ballot boxes, missing seals in certain things, cancellation of some ballot papers. And all, I think, would be responsible behavior from the international and the African community would call both parties to respect their constitution and the fundamental rules of within their country. But we as historic mediators in across Africa, I think we can play a bigger role.
in trying to push for this negotiating, just especially now that the court case has been and the judge has made a ruling, is that maybe South Africa can play a role in trying to bring about mediate between the two parties and you know, while they fight with each other inside, the real enemy is outside. As the ambassador said, the real enemy for a country like Mali is actually terrorism.
Yeah.
It's not the inside, and what we need to do as quickly as possible is try to create that mediation space if we can, as respected respected country of Africa, to try and bring a result as quickly as possible, especially now, as I say, because of the court case already now having a verdict, and the verdict going to the current incumbent, is that we can play a neutral role. We're not taking any sides. Our role is really just to try and get the parties internally to work together and to rather focus on this extreme threat of terrorism that's tearing Mali apart, to be quite honest.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chairperson.
You come after Babu Mbivamo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the information. I think also my comment will be my comment will be on the issue really of mediation. As a result that, for example, that as we know that South Africa is a champion in the peacekeeping mission, really, I think there is a need for South Africa to use the same strategy it used during Syria, when it held it assisted in the destruction of chemical weapons. As I understand that it is saying that those weapons come from Libya, so it means that those are rebels. So really, there's a need for a mediation by also assisting in the international discussion of these reforms which were brought there. I've got only one question. My question is on page 7, noting that we know Zimbabwe, we know the date of the Kojak, noting that Kojak court rejected the complaint lodged by members of the Malian opposition, but when I look at the bullet just down below that one, which is that the bullet after the last one on page 7, there is no date. As you know that Zimbabwe has got a, we know that there's a date for the court hearing, like we talk about 22nd of August. But in this instance of Mali, we don't know when, looking, because we were talking about the 14 days, and now we don't understand what will happen then, now that this sentence talks about the opposition may call for a protest. We don't know whether they may. We don't know whether they did make that call to protest, and also taking legal action by challenging the outcome. I don't know whether the outcome of the constitution also. Maybe that when you go to page 7. Yeah, that's my only question, because it is vague whether what is happening, because it's contrary to what is said on the bullet about. That talks to the rejection by the Constitutional Court, but down there it talks to that there is still a legal action that is planned. To elaborate more on that, to please inaccurate. Thank you.
Honorable Mpumlwana.
Thank you very much, KDC and the Department of Land Rights. Always appreciate your hotel and your work in the area. I just wanted to find out about only 2.5 questions. The half I've just forgotten. Now, the first one is, what are these rebels against Mali, or are they using Mali as a springboard? How many, if there are any, that are trying to work to to for the downfall of Mali and replace it with what? The second one is Mali is, well, I don't want to say it's part of France, has got the French influence, like all other French-speaking countries, I suppose. If it is so, we have got our own, or Africa has got its own economic interests, like South Africa has, and I assume that also France has. Which rebels are not very much anti-France? I wouldn't say assisted by France, but I'd say anti-France. And what would be the, in the effort of trying to be peace, I'm trying to find out the opposite camp, how powerful it is in our effort in, to try and make create stability. And the third question related to that, how is this a rebels? Are these rebels? Because let me just talk about the DRC. I know that there are no rebels interested in Malawi, because there's nothing in Malawi. There are no minerals in Malawi. But many rebels are interested in DRC and other areas that are very rich to try and loot. What I want to find out now in Mali, as you correctly put it, we don't want it to fall as far as we are concerned. What happens if it falls? Who is benefited of it? Is there any agenda for it to fall such that they benefit what? Who are they? Thank you very much.
Honorable Rapoti, bulandela wena.
Yeah, you can see that it's a pattern. Same models of Rwanda in all the African states. When we were doing the presentation, you said that Mali is on the perpetual state of state emergency. And even Bachmann said that we are even having some rebels just next door here in Mozambique. And in my view, I'm asking who is perpetuating this ungovernable Africa? And who is the role of the African Union, the role of ECOWAS, and the role of United Nations? Because you can see now, Africa is in a state of emergency. It is really a big question, a really big question. So, I don't know, Chairperson, what are you saying? Because these rebels, they are really also affecting South Africa, the modus operandi, who there is no rule or any law that really protects on the issue of elections. That the minister didn't answer that. If you go out as a presidential candidate and you announce before the proper channels are being followed, what there is no consequences in that regard. Because you are inciting, war. And there are no handlers who are making those people to do that. It can be Chetan. It can be. So there are people who are behind to cause this chaos. And the very people must tell us why same modus operandi, those presidential candidates. And you can see them, they are still young. They're still young. But what I like and what I still really appreciate is the fact that Nelson Mandela, when he came here as a president, he was 76 years. The wisdom that he brought, that is what we should even teach the generation to come. Because if you can see, this is a way of undermining matured leaders, because in them there is maturity, in them there is wisdom. So if we are going to keep quiet and having our own rebels that are undermining elders, we are doing a big mistake. This guy, you can see that he was the same age as Ntate Mandela, the very president of Zimbabwe. It's a modus operandi, it's a fashion, it's a pattern. Let's stand up and see. I don't know whether you are already an elder, Ntate, and do something about it. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Raputi, for your useful observations and comments. And I want to apologize to you that I see that you were uncomfortable as you were looking at me, whether I'm listening.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm listening properly as a chair, because I seemed to be consulting my ancestors. Now they are inaccessible when I'm here in Cape Town. What has happened is that none of them ever got into an aeroplane,
sure.
So they accompanied me to the airport. When they were climbing, what is this thing? And they just call you a boy. What is this boy getting into now? But now you are at your own risk until you are here. If I get into the sea, the same thing.
Mm.
I will be a better ancestor because I've been to this.
Oh, God.
But Mfunukwenzi's the comment that she is making, and build on what Minister was saying. You know, man, I think South Africans, and we've got to find a very gentle, diplomatic way of the importance of leadership, of building strong democratic institutions, like have a constitution, have election board or election committee, respect human rights,
no.
All of these things that we stand for. I don't want to talk for a long time, but you know, in the year 2000, in the first General Council that we attended in Port Elizabeth, the then Minister of Foreign Affairs, Minister now Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, said that she never appreciated the organization that she belongs to as well as South Africa until she became a Minister of International Relations, in terms of what she is seeing happening in the continent, that people are not allowed to from political parties, they are not denied human rights, women are abused, so many things happening in NSAS. People are only brought in as voting cows at the end of 5 years. And only now, when you travel to some of these countries, you see that there's a lot that must be done in the continent. And it must be us who must criticize ourselves for these things. Because sometimes when some of the weaknesses that we exhibit are raised by anyone within the European Union, then we say they are racist. If it's the USA, but why are you doing that? Then they are imperial. But there are weaknesses we must attend to. That a party leader or a president does not want to be unseated. And he stays there for 38 years on end. If anyone has just seen what is happening in southern Cameroon now, shocking. And that president has been there for 38 years. Aye, man. No. And you still say this is a democratic government. But of course, as I was saying, we must be sensitive. We can't say people must be limited to 2 terms unless their constitution says. But a way must be found to have a better governed Africa. Very much our responsibility. The elections in Mali. Pardon me for not having heard you well. Why did we have a runoff in the first instance? Were the first elections flawed? Were they rejected by the opposition? And then I've missed something, because I thought a runoff is actually the second elections after the first ones. Something was not right. Perhaps I'm missing it politically. Because you see, why I'm asking this question is because I wanted to establish whether the sitting president lost the elections and then they went to the elections and now they had to go for a runoff. Now he has won the elections, or the contender for power, Sisi or Sise, is rejected the results, whatever the reason, and then there was a runoff, then he still has lost the results, and whether in that context, if I'm correct, he now is accepting the results that are adjudicated upon by the Constitutional Court. And you were talking about Mali being home to 5 terrorist organizations pursuant to the collapse of Libya and of course Libya only amongst others. Okay. The question will be unfair to direct the question to you, but all I am trying to I want to say is that it is the responsibility of the regional body like the ECOWAS to the AU, now to the UN Security Council, the entire African leadership to fashion out a strategy of stabilizing and flushing out or smoking out the terrorist organizations there by assisting the government. Because if Mali is in a semi or full-blown state of emergency because of the terrorist groups, and then there will never be development there. And you'll find the citizens moving out to Nigeria, to Mauritania, coming down to South Africa. A government that governs like that then learns to abuse power with impunity, because it will say, no, it's because of the terrorists, but any legitimate voice on something else. And people just say, we don't have water. And then you say they're part of the terrorists.
So, and Iba is responsibility of the wider leadership of the African continent to deal with things like this. Just to make the observation that Honorable Raputi was referring to, and I'm linking it to what the former Minister of International Relations said without giving me a full answer. I asked them, why would people, a leader of a party goes into the elections, they reject the results of the elections, then the following day they are in a military uniform, they've got full military hardware, and they've got an area that they are controlling. Who's funding these people? Who has given, provided them all of these things? You can see that there is a third hand or a third force. And I don't know what this continent is going to do with third forces like this, who will not let go of the African continent because of its mineral resources. But you see, leadership is important. In each country, individual and collective leadership of the continent. I'm going to say it in another language. Yabona uma sithi sabantu abamnyama then sesiphethile izwe lethu bese sithi senziwe belungu say for 300 years let's say bese senziwe belungu sibe nenkinga for another 50 years after sesiphethe thina ekugcine nomunye umuntu uzosibuza ukuthi kanti nina anikahlakaniphi na niyenziwa right through uyayibona le nto le so must be adult enough kwezinye izinto. The sander some long sis cut in the national interest lapha yini ngicabanga ukuthi ngingayikhulumeli la and ngisho sizwane thina ngiyabonga over to you.
No.
Tell her what
you want. Thank you very much. Chairperson and honourable members, I will just attempt to answer some of the questions, but in a very, I'll group them, because the first one has to do with insecurity in Mali, and the manner that insecurity manifests itself in Mali. I think first and foremost it's very important to note that I think on the continent, in terms of peace and security, one of the challenges that we are facing with is terrorism and extremism. Terrorism and extremism. So in Mali, you have got a classical case for that. First, you have got people who have taken up arms in Mali demanding certain power. They felt that the national government was not giving them the required powers and so on and so on. The same thing applies in Nigeria. How Gobadami evolved in Nigeria? It evolved because there were certain states and regions in Nigeria that were so ignored, so underserviced by the national government. The kids and children in those parts of the world in Nigeria, they're not going to school. So that was a recipe for future disaster. In fact, even former President Obasanjo, having been a president for 2 terms in Nigeria, acceded to that Nigeria, certain Nigerian companies failed to provide service to what they call in South Africa, service delivery to the entire country. And therefore, we've got areas that felt that no, they were not very ignored. And therefore, the extremists take advantage of it. They go there and use the grievances, genuine grievances of the people, to pursue their own interests. And Boko Haram in Nigeria cleverly then pledged their allegiance to ISIS in the Middle East. Why? Because they want to have resources, financial resources, to persecute their own cause, whatever cause is in Nigeria.
Nigeria, and then go to the east of Africa, Somalia. In Somalia, we've got Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab pledged its allegiance for years now to Al-Qaeda. Why? Because they need to have a bigger organization that has got the technical know-how and financing to get that access. So I think it's very important, therefore, to just to understand that. So I think as a continent, therefore, we are dealing with that kind of a challenge. Mm. Now the question that arises, that we as diplomats and the bureaucrats are beginning to ask, if there's a serious inroad to deal and root out ISIS in the Middle East, where will those guys go? That's the question. There are certain reports that seem to now indicate that the easier region or path to go to is Africa. Now, close by, I think Honorable Bachmann referred to what is taking place in Mozambique. Mozambique is very close by. And there are reports there that there are, I mean, some people camouflaging as a cement in that part of the world. And Mozambique is very close by to us. And we must then look at the geopolitical development in Mozambique. We then find that the northern part of Mozambique historically always complained that the national government in Maputo does not take care of them. So again, you've got fertile ground for extremist people with ultra motives to take root and create instability. So South Africa and the region, Southern Africa, should be extremely concerned about what is going on in Nigeria, I mean in Mozambique, because it's close by, and begin to meet with Mozambique and try to find out what is it that is taking place there, what is that the countries in the region need to do to arrest that, before it comes close to us. Now, the issue, there was a proposal by Honorable Bachmann made South Africa, I've been affirmed by Honorable Kenya that maybe South Africa may wish to consider playing a role in the peace process in Mali. There's a peace process in Mali, and historically it's been led by Algeria. We have over the years pledged our support and gave financial and material support to that process. And it led to the signing of some agreements in the past. But this, what happens in these conflict areas, you sign an agreement, but in less than a month or 6 months down the line, all the signatures, most of the signatures violate that. It's a case in point, it's in South Sudan. We don't know how many agreements have been signed in South Sudan, and how often and how regular those agreements are being undermined. But then it talks to what the chair was saying. What is it that the continent needs to do to ensure that we are better government? There are several things that have to be done. First and foremost, we believe that you need to strengthen institutions. When institutions like election commission, they need to be strengthened, they need to be credible, they need to be independent. Mm-hmm. So that when they speak, when they adjudicate on elections, all citizens in the country don't perceive them to be working for the ruling party. Mm. And that's where we are lacking on the continent. Mm. That's where we are lacking on the continent. And it's a process. It's not an event. We are marching towards ensuring that we have strong institutions. The day we have a strong institution, then we then claim that we are better government. In terms of mechanism that we have come up with as a continent, they are there. SADC has got its own guidelines on conducting democratic elections, signed by SADC member states, 15 member states. The AU has got its own. When we observe elections in SADC, we're using the SADC guidelines and the electoral law in the country concerned and the constitution of the country to see whether those elections were conducted in terms of the applicable legislation. What I'm saying, we're trying to create a framework to measure our performance, but it's a process. It's a process. On the I mean, obviously, Honorable Pumban, we have no information that says some of those extremists or terrorists in Mali are sympathetic to the French and so on. We don't have that information. It would be highly unlikely because if France, we need to refer to them. Came in handy about 3 or 4 years ago and put in a military deployment there that managed to arrest the situation before ECHO was deployed. So they managed to arrest the situation. You still have a bigger French deployment there, like Europe and the Germans are there and everybody's there. So, I mean, obviously, we don't believe that they would be sympathetic to any particular country and so on. So. I mean, as we have spoken about the pitfalls of possible collapse of money. That's why our government, as I said, for the past 15 years, we made an assessment and realized that Mali needs to be capacitated, their army, their police. So Mali has been purchasing some equipment from us, from South Africa, for the police and for the army. Because if the army is poorly capacitated, then it's not going to be able to secure the territory integrity of the country. So, as the police. The consequences of statements that may be made by leaders is quite unfortunate. As we said, what happened, at least in the case of Zimbabwe, in most countries, in fact, what then happens before the elections are held, political parties signed what we call a code of conduct.
Honorable Mukhalapa, in my old capacity as school principal, I used to do certain things to the noisemaker in the class. Now, I'm no longer allowed now because...
Was I vocal?
Yeah.
Apologies.
Chairperson, just to conclude, In most of the countries, when they are going to elections, they political parties sign what we call a code of conduct. In Zimbabwe, they sign what they call a peace pledge, where they were all pledging to ensure that there was peace and unity as the country was moving towards the election. But as that is the case, very often then politicians violate the same conduct. It happens. It happens, and of course, I think as a continent, as a region, Southern Africa, we take a huge view against such comments because such comments have got the potential to incite the country and plunge the country into serious conflict. Our strategic intention is to ensure that we deal and resolve with all the conflict areas, particularly Southern Africa. And by extension throughout the country. I can stop there. Ambassador Seyo will talk to why runners, and I think that was a question about why runners, and the page that Honorable Kanye referred to, that seems to contradict another point. Thank you very much, Chairman.
2 minutes to do that. I'm losing 2 members. They are attending another meeting.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll try. The electoral law regime in Mali provides for, with regard to presidential election, if there is no outright winner during the first round, you go to the second round. So that's why the second round is. During the first round, 24 candidates. None of them are marked 50% plus one, make them an outright winner. The current president registered something like 41% or 4%. Number two was sitting at about 17%. And the rest of the 22 candidates could not make it. So the second round then was occasioned by the fact that there was no outright winner at the beginning. Now after the first round, results were announced. There were complaints that were lodged, but those complaints were rejected on the basis that
the parties were late. They didn't meet the 48-hour deadline. Now, what we reflected on the slide that the Honourable Member was referring to was an observation that we were making from our side to say, if there were complaints lodged during the first round and they were not adequately dealt with substantively, but were disregarded based on a technicality, we may anticipate that there may be problems during the second round. And indeed, after the second round, FIFA announced that he was going to reject the outcomes of the election on the basis that there were certain irregularities. The Constitutional Court looked at the complaints that they lodged and came to the conclusion that there was no basis for those complaints, and therefore announced the incumbent president, Keita, as the president-elect, as we speak.
Yeah, and then was the presidential candidate Sisa then accept that?
Sisa we have not yet any reports after the Constitutional Court made its final declaration on Monday. This happened on Monday.
Yeah.
Yesterday in Mali it was a public holiday. Today is also a public holiday. The observation that we made was that the timing of the announcement by the Constitutional Court, knowing fully well that yesterday was a public holiday, the incumbent president declared today as another public holiday. Decreed today as another public holiday. Mm. So whatever initiative that this would have taken in the form of inciting protests and so on and other activities, that would have been paralyzed by the fact that Malians are now on holiday. And it is when we talk to our colleagues on the ground, they say between yesterday and Sunday, they don't anticipate anything happening, and that Mali will be open for business next week on Monday. So any momentum that would have been galvanized by the opposition during this period would have been paralyzed. So we do not think that CSA will be able to challenge the outcomes of the as pronounced by the Constitutional Court. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Deputy Minister and the officials. Just before we adjourn our meeting, we are releasing the members that have requested to attend the Justice Committee. Committee Secretary, you remember there was a request or a demand by Honourable Kalyan that we must get the program between now and the last time before we arrive. Just find a way we must get that program so that members can, even if there will be many changes, but let's get that program so that members can look at that. And they check for us the minutes, because one of the weaknesses of this committee under my chairpersonship is to leave the minutes unadopted for 6 up to 7 sometimes. And we must make sure that before we rise, all the minutes would have been... So sometimes the minutes of the 3 or so or 4 or so meetings, she swap back and then she finish up now. And then let's also announce Honor Mukhalapa and the members who remember we gave you an oral report of the joint oversight visit. Now that report, the draft report has now been given to yourselves. That is a draft report.
but requesting you to read it in the main, read the terms of.
It's not yet given.
It's not yet given, eh? Okay. But all I can say is that when we discuss it, we look at the terms of reference, why the objective of visiting Namibia, and then the findings, and then the recommendations. Now, we will then report to all the necessary political principals, like the speaker, the chief whip, the chair of committees, and the affected ministers. For instance, it will be Minister Sisulu and Minister Ncesi. Then, we hope that at two levels. One level is to assist ourselves to make an educated recommendation on clause number 8 on state property outside the country. But we hope that with that, Parliament will advise the rest of government about what to do with state property outside. Because what we saw in Namibia, we suspect that it is the case for all the properties, is that it is neglected. Because it ergo aina lawful authority, but it doesn't have the money to do all of those things. So we hope this will be a case study to assist them to solve this. Now, we thought that we'll have a joint committee this week. I remember, it was not possible because the other committee was going to do everything that we did. Only this week, I hope today or whatever the time, they are going to do that. And then, so the process is over. Net delay by a week or two. Just kancane nje. But once it comes back here, it's going to be fast, because when it comes back here and we adopt the joint oversight report with the recommendations, it will immediately be 80 seat, and then it will go for a debate, then it will be referred by the speaker to the NCOP. Our hope is that all of these things must happen before we rise. That's why I'm interested was with when are we rising, so that systems are backward. And with that, for all your inputs and for a very productive discussion by the members and by the department, and so much education that and it set ran into our heads. But so much education on the developments on the three countries. We want to thank all of those who made their comments, and want to thank the department for preparing thoroughly for meetings like this. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Unless this peacefully and against it, I also say the meeting is a journey.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.